And then, after a little while, she said yes, and I walked the 300 miles back again. So that was 600. And then when I went in to get married, in 1926, around about Christmas time, I walked the 300 miles back again. So by the time we stood up to repeat our marriage vows in Villaloosa, in Angola, I had walked 900 miles to get there. And then we started off on a honeymoon walk of 250 miles away up to the north of Angola. And we had quite a time on that trip. Not going to talk about it tonight. But then again, it was a 250-mile walk, a honeymoon walk. It took us 13 days to do it, again, just sleeping on the ground at night and walking about somewhere between 15 and 20 miles a day, depending on where we found water at night. And then after we finally arrived at the place where we had chosen, I cleared off the ground, cut down the stumps, cut down the trees, and rubbed out the stumps, and made a little clearing right in the forest, and built a little house. And before we had any furniture, we had to knock the trees down, saw up the lumber by hand labor with a cross-cut saw. And I was just about as green as the lumber that we cut down. I had a little bit of training here on how to use tools. But you know, we had beautiful, beautiful timber in the middle of an African forest. And we had mahogany, and we had teak, all kinds of beautiful timber. But I never got the idea through my head that before I could cut the tree up, it was better to get a dry tree that already had been killed by lightning or by some other reason, rather than cut down a green tree and try and saw it up by hand labor. And there wasn't a man in the country had ever handled a saw. Oh, I was thankful for the practical training that I got before I went out there. You know, God leads a man in the way that, I suppose, the type of work that he has to do. But we cut the trees down anyway, and after cutting up one or two green trees, then we went through the forest and we found some trees that had been killed by lightning. And we knocked them down, and that was a little bit easier. And so time went on, we got our little home together. And then after we got our home together, then it was making furniture. One week we would get a table, next week a chair. And then we made our window furniture and our door frames and all the rest of it. And after some time, we had a little three-room house right there in the middle of the woods. Before we had the house, we lived in a tent about 9 feet by 6 feet. And then at our first day, inside the tent was 4 foot 6 covering the ground. And logs placed on top. And the whole thing lay together with bamboo and bark rope and 2 or 3 armfuls of grass. And we sat in that place for about 6 months until we got our little home together. And the next thing, of course, was submitting a language to write. But that again is a very big subject. We have spent several years in learning Portuguese and Portugal, Umbundo in BA, and then the Chokwe language among the Chokwe people. And here, when we went up to the Songo tribe, here was a language that never had been committed to writing at all. And we had to compile their dictionary and their grammar, and just pick the words out of the people's mouths, and then after we're able to at least converse with the people, start in and do the first translation work of the scriptures into the Songo tongue. First of all, the gospel by Mark, and then the gospel by John, and so on. This is the kind of a life that a pioneer missionary lives. Now, our time is just almost gone, and I'd just like to say that during the years that we have spent in Africa, in cooperation with our beloved fellow workers, now, there's one thing I always feel, that in a meeting of this character, I believe that any man who speaks of the work should give proper tribute to his fellow workers. And I want to do that tonight. I don't want to give the idea at all, not by any means, that we were responsible for what has been going on in Angola. I want to pay tribute to those early men, the men who laid down the foundations of gospel and assembly testimony in Angola. Mr. Fred Arnold, Mr. Charles Swan, and Mr. Fred Lane, the Murren family, Mr. Godley, and Mr. Roberts. These were the men who for many years labored for the Lord in that part. We had the privilege of going in after them. So some places we had the privilege of going into virgin soil. For instance, the Sangha tribe. We had the privilege of going in there for the first time. But as far as the Ubuntu are concerned, and the Chokis are concerned, I want to make it perfectly plain that we're good men there before I got there. The men who opened up the work among the Chokis, one was a good Northern of Ireland man. His name was William Nathan. He too has found the will of the Lord. And the other was a Scotchman. His name was Tom Lighter. These were the men who pioneered the Chokis tribe. And they do thank God for these early pioneers who labored and worked for the Lord and laid down foundations. And then I want to pay tribute to our beloved brethren and sisters who are there today. We think of Chalanda, Don Cole and his wife, Naomi, they're there. And two young women. They're all, of course, from the United States. Then when we come over to Kapanga, where we have spent the last 20 years, we find there Walter Gannon and his wife. And Jack King, right here from Belfast, and his wife, they are there. Then we come over to Chittagong, the place where Mr. Ed Bodley pioneered and spent over 46 years of work there at Chittagong. Today, Robert Taylor and his wife are there. Then we come over to Monte Esperanza, and there Dr. Ross Woodward is carrying on hospital work there and leper work. And then at the same time, in the same place, Charlie Shorten and his wife are there. And there's several young women too, helping in the school and in the medical work. Then at Burma, there's Dr. Leslie Beer. He has a beautiful hospital there. I don't think that anyone who would go there would be ashamed of that wonderful work that Dr. Beer has built up at Burma. It's really a tribute to that man's lifetime of work in that place. And not only Dr. Deere and his wife, but Vivian Grant is there too. And then our good friend and brother, Herbert Griffiths. He was the best man at our wedding, and he's been a lifetime friend. He too has put in about 48 years of work at Roma. And then we come around to look at time in Choco Land, and our friend and brother, David Long, is there at look at time. And a young Englishman called Roy Wood and his wife, they're also there. And the two young women were also helping in the school and in the medical work at the University. And I do want from the very best of my heart to pay tribute to these beloved brethren and sisters who are there today. Now just a word about results. Among the Ubuntu speaking people, we have about 250 companies of believers. Now, it was quite a common thing, up until the present difficulty in Angola, to get conferences there with 3,000 believers. Just before we left Kapango, we had a conference at Easter time, and we had 2,000 people at that conference. We're not able to hold the general conferences that we used to have on account of the building. We can't get a building big enough to hold. But at the last conference we were at, we had 2,000 believers there, and a good part of the ministry, at least more than half of the ministry, was by our African brethren, able to minister the word in the most profitable way. And so among the Ubuntu speaking people, we have about 250 companies of believers. Among the Chokwe, in round figures, we have there about 200 ascendants. Again, no time to talk about the development of the work among the Chokwe tribe. But God has wonderfully wrought among those people. And among the Sangha people, for we went in there for the first time in 1925, there are 22 places where there is a testimony among that people. You know, I wish I could stop there. And one wonders just what we should say about present conditions in Angola. I'm not going to go into any detail about it. But there's some very distressing things that have happened in Angola in recent days. Just before we left there in 1961, where my wife and I, we had the privilege of spending a year again among the people in Africa. And just before we left, and just after we left, owing to the conditions in the northern part of Angola, young men riding jeeps, Portuguese security forces, taken through the country, on eight of our principal brethren, men, all of them whom I have known personally for over 30 years, most of whom I had the privilege of leading to the Lord and teaching them the scriptures, they were taken out and executed with a firing squad. You know, I can't even allow myself to think about it. But these are the conditions in Angola today. Many of our beloved brethren are in concentration camps. Some of them have lost their lives. There was one young man, and again, my wife and I have known him since he was a child. He too, and I want to make it plain that none of these brethren have had anything whatsoever to do with subversive activity in any form. It had nothing whatever to do with politics, but because they were simple believers, right in the middle of the bush without any outside protection, these young men who spoke no language but their own language, which is Portuguese, and coming up into the interior, about every 15 miles, there'd be a little gospel hall. We went in and they asked for the leader, the responsible man there, and he was just taken out, no questions asked, put up against the tree and shot. Now, some of them were taken up to a place called Novaganga, and one of them, a boy called Zuzi, and he was brought up before the firing squad. The officer was there, there was men, just about ready to give the order to shoot. And the boy, he lifted his head and he started to think, God will take care of you. Be not afraid, whatever the tide, God will take care of you. A lovely hymn that has been translated into his own song language. And he started to sing at the top of his voice, be not dismayed, whatever the tide, God will take care of you. And the officer was so surprised. What are you singing about? Well, he said, I understand. He said, you're going to send me into the presence of God. And I thought the best way to go, he said, would be a hymn of praise on my lips. And the officer, he was so surprised, he told the men to lower their guns. And he called them over. He said, what's your name? Oh, he said, my name is Zuzi. That's the way the way the Africans pronounce the word Joseph. He says, my name is Zuzi. Well, he said, at least you're a man anyway. And he pulled a notebook out of his pocket and he wrote a little note and sent him down to the administrative officer. He just let this fellow go. And he was the only man out of the crowd that was taken up there for execution that actually escaped. And he's at the present time in a certain place down there in BA today. We do thank God for men who have been loyal and faithful and true to Christ, even in face of death. But all beloved friends, do remember our brethren over in Angola today. My time is more than one, I'm not going to talk any more about it. But the point is this, that if any of them come out today and want to go back again, they're simply refused to be. And it just means that the door is slowly closing. For the Lord's servants, that is the missionary brethren, the door is slowly closing in Angola today. But please do remember in your prayers. Some of them from this country, the David Long over there, and the Jack King. Jack has seen an awful lot there. You know, he's very quiet, diffident, sensitive. He's not the kind of a man that talks about himself. But at the same time, he's been through an awful lot in these past few months and in the last couple of years. Remember, these are brethren in prayer. And those that are still there, that God will preserve and keep them and give them to see his hand in death.